Today's Texas High School Baseball Coaches Association podcast features San Diego Padres scout Kevin Hamm. Kevin was drafted by the Angels out of El Paso and later became a scout for the Angels. We focus today pretty much on the different do's and don'ts for parents and players when dealing with scouts. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blast Motion.
Blast Motion is a sports technology and information company. We have a sensor that we manufacture, we capture data, and then we take that data and give you information and insights to help you train better and become a better athlete.
Some of the successes that Blast has had is, number one, the MLB market. Are using the product extensively to understand and evaluate their players.
Our tech is mobile, our tech is affordable, our tech is something that you can easily implement into your program, into your organization.
It's time to train smarter and get better.
Can you hear me?
Bart.
Hey, what's going on?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're recording already, so just kind of a heads up. This will be a little bit different than what we usually do, because most of the time we have coaches on. So if I call you coach, I apologize already ahead of time.
Oh, no worries. No problem at all.
But the beginning will kind of be like all the other podcasts that we've had. So, you know, what is your baseball background? You know, where did you play going all the way back to high school? And what organizations have you worked for?
Okay. Are you asking me that now? Are we ready to go? We're rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling already.
Oh, man, my background, born and raised in El Paso, Texas, and actually baseball was kind of my second, third love. You know, I guess I found, I wouldn't say my third love, because I just found it later in, later than basketball and football. And so I was a three-sport athlete there at Eastwood High School in El Paso, pride of the East Side. And I started as a sophomore in all three sports. Football, I was a running back, linebacker, pretty much just came off the field on kickoff returns and punt return. And basketball, I was in hog heaven the last 5 weeks with this Michael Jordan thing, because he was my idol. I mean, I probably had every poster you could imagine. When a new poster came out, I had it, and it was somewhere hanging in my room or on my ceiling. And then baseball, my sophomore year, made varsity, and our shortstop, Brian Medrano, he's actually a really good friend, still a longtime friend, and high school coach there in El Paso, actually at our alma mater at Eastwood High School. And he helps me out there, kind of bird dogs a little bit. But he was a really good ball player, shortstop. And so his dad played in the minor leagues with the Oakland A's, actually was teammates with Tony La Russa. And way back then. And so scouts started coming around to see Ryan. And I was a sophomore. I was really athletic. I was raw, but I could run. And I had some bat-to-ball skills and a little bit of power. And so scouts started coming to see him, and that's when I kind of got on their radar screen. At that point, obviously, wasn't really focusing on baseball. It was more football. Was starting to get really letters every week from all over the country, football related. And then that summer of going into my junior year, a lot of teams started calling, wanting me to play summer baseball with them. And Eastwood was a football school, so, you know, they had a pretty mandatory, non-mandatory off-season program. And so I was going to be, you know, we had a six-pack of sophomores that started on varsity. So that was kind of – and we made the playoffs. So that group was kind of the core that was coming as juniors. And I was kind of the missing link. So the coaches were kind of on me a little bit. And I'm like, hey, I'm out here playing baseball. I'm playing playing with three teams. And so that's when I really fell in love with baseball. And the idea of professional baseball, really, because I liked playing multiple games during the day, you know, at tournaments. Actually, Houston was one of the first tournaments outside of El Paso, big tournaments that I got to go to. And just being in hotels, driving around, playing the game you love, I was like, man, you know what? Maybe these are going to be in the cards. And fast forward 2 years later, had no idea that the Angels were on me. I was kind of a hideout. You know, there's probably about four or five teams that were on me, but being in El Paso, it's kind of like it is now. You got to really know that there's a guy out there before some guys go out there. Not specifically for me. That's still my backyard. I take pride and it really is a kind of under scouted area, but there's baseball's picking up. And so the Angels ended up drafting me in the 13th round. And at that point, I had an offer to the University of Nebraska, full offer there, and kind of sight unseen. A bureau scout by the name of Jim Walton had about me, and they started calling. And then one of a pitcher from El Paso, he pitched in the big leagues, Rocky Coppinger, he was signed to Nebraska. So they started doing their homework and kind of sight unseen, they called and asked, hey, well, why haven't you signed with anyone? And for me, the big deal, and it kind of carries over into how I look at my job now, but in football, you know, colleges were calling and it was going to be full rides, you know, and I was definitely educated minded, made really good grades. But my thought was, well, if I play football, my mom, she doesn't have to pay for my school. And I wouldn't have to pay for nothing. You know, basically it's a full ride. And so I felt, not understanding how college baseball worked, I was, you know, when college started calling and checking in, in fact, I remember being recruited by Tim Tadlock at the time. He was a assistant coach at Hill Junior College. And so I didn't understand. All I knew is, hey, you guys want me to come play baseball, but then I'm going to have to pay for it. I'm like, no, that doesn't work. So my whole outlook has always been, definitely educated minded, getting the degree, but more so on the lines of who's going to pay for that degree, I can go for free. So that's kind of how that evolved. Angels come in. Never seen the scout. We're still really good friends. I guess I was learning about scouting before I even started scouting, because I thought, like, I didn't know he saw me. And come to find out, when he comes to sign me, he's like, oh, I saw you at this game. You hit a home run this game. I came back this day. So next thing you know, I'm like, wow, this guy's got it. He really was there. And his name's Chris Klein. He's actually scouting director for the Nationals. So that's how ironic, because I ended up getting his job when I got into scouting, when he was getting promoted and going to the Diamondbacks. So it was really ironic. I really believe it was a blessed path that was provided for me. It definitely wasn't one that I was thinking about. I was thinking I was a big leaguer, and that's where I was. That's what was going to happen. And unfortunately it didn't. My actually afterthoughts, outside of sports, was meteorology. I'm a huge weather buff, you know? So the other day when we talked on the phone and you were telling me about the storm that blew through, hurricane season, there's hurricane. I could stay up 24, 48 hours. That's actually one of the things I want to do, is go, like tornado chasing, you know. Unfortunately, that's during baseball time, but I guess, you know, after retirement, that's, I'd like to go do that one time, is just go tornado chase. But I'm a big weather buff, and obviously a baseball guy.
Right. So what are all the organizations that you've worked for? Of course, you're drafted by the Angels.
Yeah. That's I spent a long time there, had a good run with the Angels, was drafted by them in 93, played in the minor leagues till 99. And then I actually was going back to school. I was going to go back to UTEP to walk on to play football. I actually had a plan, you know, and that's one thing I talk about players is, you know, is having a plan of, you know, just just having a plan on what you're going to do in case it doesn't happen. You know, and mine was, hey, you know what? I had a 7-year plan and it didn't happen, but I was still young enough to go back, and my school was being paid for to go walk on and play football. So I was trying to go back and play football at UTEP. And, you know, like I said, I was blessed to have opportunity. Angels called, said, we got a opportunity in North Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and Arkansas. We're going to send you to scout school, which was in Arizona. And at the time it was run by Major League Baseball. It was a three week program. So I was really tired of being broke too. So I also knew how hard those jobs were to come by.
Right.
And so, ironically, I go to the scout school and the gentleman, Jim Walton, which was the, kind of the king, the head of the Major League Scouting Bureau. He had been there for quite a long time. The one that he recommended me to University of Nebraska. So that was, and he was also the first scout that came into my home. Cowboy hat, long white. Those that are going to listen to this and know Jim Walton, they're going to smile and laugh because he's as marvelous a mute human being as there is. But he had a big white Cadillac and cowboy hat, and he came into my home, and the day I went into that scout school, it might have been the same outfit. He might have four outfits, but he's got the hat and everything. And I went and just thanked him for the recommendation to go to Nebraska, and he actually gave me some of my precious advice I've gotten at that time, because I was trying to decide between going into player development or going to scouting. And he gave me his shared his wisdom, and he steered me in the right direction. So Angels, 93-99, I start scouting in 99. Fall of 99, Donnie Rowland hired me. And then for 3 years, I just did scouting, North Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and Arkansas. And then I got the opportunity to go and got a call about being a minor league hitting coach with our Provo Angels team. And at the time, it was something I wanted to learn. You know, I'd always kind of wanted to get that side of it and get that experience. And
right.
It was kind of, like I said, it was a right time opportunity, and it was awesome. 2 years. In fact, 1 year we won the league, and 7 of those players made the big leagues. And, 2 of them I happened to sign, so that was really special for me, because one of them was a hometown kid by the name of Fernando Rodriguez.
Oh,
and that was my thing. Coming from El Paso, kind of had that chip on my shoulder. Still, like, when I played there, it doesn't get kind of the respect or the looks. So when I started scouting, I said, if there's any big leaguer from El Paso, I'm either going to get him or be in the mix for him. And my second year in, Fernando Rodriguez, we took him in the 18th round, I believe, a freshman reliever from El Paso Community College. And so that year, him and Reggie Willits was a 7th rounder. We signed them both, and then I happened to be able to be the hitting coach. So I spent the summer, the 3 months with them. And so that was really special to me to have scouted them, signed them, and then seeing them develop, and then both of them get to the big league, especially in Fernie's case, being an El Paso boy.
Right.
But in both of their cases, I think we'll really tribute to both of them their work ethic and their tremendous human beings, and they've done well for themselves, so happy for them. But that was kind of the deal. Did a little scouting and player development for 2 years, and then my son was born, and that was just going to take too much time. So I went back to just doing scouting full time, and was with the Angels up in 2015. I was able to climb the ranks and become the Midwest cross checker with those guys. And then kind of the run came to an end. It was a great run, great organization. And then the Padres came calling, it's been a blessing in regards to being able to be over here with these guys. So yeah. And now I've been with the Padres for 4 years. So
right.
I think that's a span of 26 years there, Bart, in 5 minutes for you.
And you know, this wasn't one of the questions that I had sent you, but what do you think the Angels saw in you? Because I'm sure they don't ask everybody that, you know, is finished playing to be a scout. What do you think it was that about you that they said, hey, this guy could really do a good job for us?
Well, I think, and this is one thing I tell players as, you know, we're going through this and we're interviewing them, you know, there's things that we're looking for. And one thing I've kind of always gravitated to, you know, is that player that kind of, and I'm not getting into any philosophy, that's not what we're doing with our organization or anything, but just that player that loves baseball. Hey, what do you want to do afterwards? I want to be a coach. You know, so I like to tell those guys, like, hey, you're going to get, just talk about the most awesome internship. You're actually playing the game, trying to develop to reach your dreams. But in that time, you got the opportunity to pick every brain that comes through here. And I think some of the good organizations, I think that's where they look first from within. You know your personnel, you know the passion and drive, what you're getting. So I think that's a really good starting point, and that's where I think that's where they looked at me. You know, it was kept my nose clean throughout this time. I was I was raw, so I was always behind. So I was always I had to learn, and right. So that's what they kind of told me is that, you know, and what I come to find out, there was a lot of guys on our staff that were ex-players. That wanted to stay in the game, and they gave us the opportunity to. And so that's kind of how I did it. And I'm not sure if that's what was their vision and what was in mind, or they were just trying to throw me a life raft. But it's worked out. I've been, like I said, it's 26 years in this game, and just provided just a great life. So, right. Yeah.
Well, you know, you kind of gave us the idea of why you got into scouting and everything else, but, say, you know, again, most of this is for high school coaches. You know, what advice would you have for a baseball coach who might be interested in scouting and trying to get into it? Now, I know it's tough, and, it's for me, it seems like it's better off to stay in the organization, you know, rather than get out and try and come back in. But I'm not for sure. So, you know, what advice would you give to a coach who's interested in something like that?
It's definitely, and obviously I went through it when I got let go with the Angels, and I was fortunate just to, you know, just had to work my butt off throughout the years and had some success to where I was fortunate to find a job. That's not always the case. And I've seen it more and more where guys are having a tough time getting back in. So if you can stay in and navigate that way up the ladder, that's probably the best way. It is tough. There's just so many resumes out there. What I try to tell high school coaches, that are trying to get into it, one, careful what you wish for. It's totally different than when I first started scouting in 99. It's very fast paced. It's nonstop. You know, at one point it used to be where you had a little bit of time in November, but now it's pretty much with everyone playing year round, especially down here in our area and in Texas, it's nonstop. And, you know, our job is to try to find players as early as possible. So if you're identifying them as a sophomore, there's never a day where there's not something to do, you know, right. Whether you can find something. So that's it. And obviously if you got family, your wife, better be on board, you know, and
right.
I tip my hat to my wife, which was my high school sweetheart. We're approaching on 20 years, and, without her, it doesn't work. You know, the whole saying, happy wife, happy home. She, you know, we're just spend so much time on the road, and your wife's got to definitely be on board in that regard. But all that checks, then, you know, I try to tell guys is go to games and get around some of the area guys. They're at the game, especially kind of in your area, Bart. It's, you know, it's an area where guys aren't just going down there. you know, and, right. And I love going down there, you know that. And they've got ball players. And so it's kind of befriending one of the scouts, introducing yourselves. You got, that's the thing. You got to be outgoing and just kind of, hey, I'm down here. I love, you know, if I can help you. And this is the thing where a lot of guys get kind of burnt, is not burnt, but they kind of cut their legs off, is they make this contact. They start, you know, the scouts say, oh, I'm going to give him a shot. You know, hey, you know, the next thing you know, he starts sending you names and you go down and see the players and they're horrible, you know? So then it's like you tend, and that's the thing, you know, over the years you build a network and you tend to find guys that, you know, hey man, every time this guy says there's guys or a player, there's a player. So you tend to kind of weed them out that way. But right. Yeah, you got to kind of get, you know, go meet some scouts. You're at the, you know, the Texas Scout Association game, all 30 clubs. There's a ton of scouts there. Every year there's a turnover. Every year there's probably, you know, there's been about 2-3 new area scouts. Well, they're looking for help. You know, they're trying to establish their network. Sometimes it falls in their lap from the previous scout that was in the area, or sometimes you got to go and start developing your own network. And that's a good way to do it. And once you do that, it's just opportunity, being at the right place at the right time, being open-minded. You know, I try to tell guys it's kind of like with the players, you got to understand the process and can't cut corners. So if you want to go learn how to evaluate off of, you know, a spin machine or off of a, you know, just a radar gun, then you could do that. But let's try to do it by taking all those instruments away, learning it from the ground up, and then adding those instruments along the way to as another tool. You know, so
right.
I've seen some guys that, hey, you know, and I'm up for giving advice, and right away they want to cut the corner and go to, you know, it's kind of like the calculator. Hey, what happens if the computers and the calculator shut down and you don't know how to add and subtract? You're in trouble and divide, you know. And so that's the foundation of basically scouting. And I think once you get a good foundation, then it gives you a little bit better understanding on the other tools that we use to help us come to an evaluation.
Right. Okay, perfect. And you know, you went through the process where you weren't sure, you know, whether talking about, you know, playing pro ball or going into playing, you know, going to college. So the whole point of this podcast is kind of help parents and help kids and even help coaches, you know, maybe, you know, give them some ideas and tell them the do's and don'ts that go along with interacting with a scout, or if your kid's being scouted and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be perfect for you. So
let's do it.
You know, what's a typical pro workout? And cause I've seen so many different, I mean, there's some things that are pretty much similar in all of them, but each guy has a different pro workout. And how can a kid prepare for a pro workout?
Pro workouts, they vary depending on organization and what they value. You know, some may have the 60, may not run the 60. Right. Some may want to get grip strength, some may not. You know, so it varies every year. It seems like we're adding and subtracting to kind of the soup, but typically it's a 60-yard dash. I tell kids, I said, hey, you know, if you haven't run the 60, like my kid right now, he's a freshman, and it's, hey, if you're going to run it once or twice, why don't you go and train and run it 10 times, and so that once or twice ain't going to, you know, it's not going to be right. Not going to be a big deal. And so definitely just getting used to the 60, especially with like some of the football players, they're used to running 40s. I was that guy. And usually at that 50-yard mark, the monkey's jumping on your back. So learn to finish, you know, be able to finish strong, and that'll equate to a better time. So the 60-yard dash, and then we usually grade their arm, which is outfielders usually in right field, infielders at shortstop. And what kids need to understand, it's you've got to get yourself ready to show. You're only making two throws. You're only run the you're only running 60 twice. You know, you're only getting 10 swings. You know, if you're on the mound, you might get 15 pitches. So you got to understand you're ready to basically show in those type of showcases, environments. Then they'll throw from the position. Catchers usually behind the plate, get a pop time, you know, trying to look for something under 2 seconds. You know, that's kind of the average. Under two is what you're looking at. But, you know, some guys get so caught up in the arm strength and the pop times. It's, you know, you can have a really good pop time with not a really good arm, or a really bad pop time with a good arm. So it's more so looking at foot transfers and all that stuff. And then usually hitting. Guys get to go in there and swing it off of, you know, with wood, off, you know, some pearls. And then it's a wrap. That's pretty much the pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, the pitchers get up there, warm up in the bullpen, come out, throw you 15 pitches, take us through your bullpen. And that's pretty much the wrap-up of a pro workout. But understand everything you're doing out there is scaled on basically a major league scale. So if we go watch the Houston Astros, we're grading those guys on the same scale as we go and see that high school or junior college or college player.
Right. Now I've been to workouts that you've run, especially there in Houston. And how do you integrate competition into your workouts? Because we might, you know, as coaches, we might even be able to use some of that stuff.
Well, I think, first of all, the workout in itself should create competition if you're a competitive guy. And so that's right. That right away is one of the things I'm looking for, is that guy that wants to that player that's searching the best one out, and he's looking to take him down. And what happens is, in a workout, you'll start seeing those guys gravitate, you know, and you've been to our workout where we've run 60s, and I always put a challenge round, you know, because the more competitive, usually the alpha dog, if he hasn't been pronounced or everyone knows he is, he wants to be known. And so he's going to call out that guy that ran in a different group. He wants to run against him. So there's a lot of stuff you kind of read between the lines with that. But that in itself, like I said, the workout should create the competition. But we'll do some things like that. Like you said, like you've seen, is, hey, call out round. You guys control it. Who you call out, whoever you want. And next thing you know, you see competition. And then you get the guys throwing from the outfield. Okay. The competition's, it's there. It's already built kind of in itself. And then you could take it up a notch, you know, where, hey, we're going to have king of the mountain. So we're going to say who's the best guy, you know. And then from a hitting standpoint, you break them up into groups and, you know, we watch them hit, and then we might do a little challenge in terms of, we let them pick their teams and let them have fun, let their hair down. So we have, like, you know, hey, here's a couple team captains. You guys pick the teams, and we're going to, you know, and then we give them the parameters and let them go. So that's kind of, you know, you just be creative with it, but the workout in itself should create, I mean, for the guys that, you know, like I said, the ones that are the more competitive ones, they're going to try to go out there and show and want to walk away, because guess what? All these guys that are coming know each other. You know, they all know each other. They've all played against each other. So, you know, there's some text messages going on when they leave and said, no, I got you. I beat you. So that's it, you know, and you just – that's it.
All right. Now, getting away from the workouts a little bit, how is the change in the draft going to really affect players this year?
I mean, can't go too much into it, but the obvious is – there's just less opportunity, you know. It's you know, you could do the math. There's 30 teams. It's 5 rounds, and going from 40 to, you know, that's just opportunity. So it's unfortunate for the kids. I really feel for them all the way around, but especially, you know, the high school seniors. I mean, the college guys are getting their year back, but for a high school senior that put in all that work, was counting on that year to maybe get that JUCO offer, you know, it's heartbreaking. I kind of look back and I go, wow, what happens if back in 93, I was a 13th rounder, this happened, do I ever get the opportunity? You know, and so just got to stay optimistic, keep grinding. Cream rises to the top. If you can play, we'll find you, you know, and, you know, we're all, everyone's in the same boat, you know, and just you got to do what you got to do in terms of staying ready. And then when everything gets going, then, you know, it's, we'll see who was ready or who's been working, who hasn't, you know, so.
Right. Okay. So, what advice do you have for parents or players when they are trying to make that decision between signing that pro contract or going to school? I know we've talked about this a lot, but this would be something that parents really need to hear.
Every situation is going to be different. And what I try to tell parents is really educate yourself, because at the end of the day, the education is what we're really talking about. And that's a misconception that a lot of people have. And I hear it from both sides in terms of the pro side, college. But at the end of the day, you know, you hear that scouts are so pro baseball. I think what it comes down to is we really know what's going on. And we understand that the only thing that is guaranteed is that scholarship that a team provides. And at the end of the day, we try to play on all these select teams. We do all this stuff in order to get a scholarship, in order for someone to pay for our school. So at the end of the day, I understand that Major League Baseball's scholarship plan is second to none. And because it's the only thing along with the bonus that's guaranteed in the whole shebang. And so I just tell parents, like, you got to take it. It's a case-by-case basis. Only you know your situation. You got to go where you're wanted. I'm not just talking pro baseball. I'm talking deciding on where to go to school. You know, understand that, like, a lot of times we all got our hit list and our grand five that we want to go to. But maybe that's not a fit for you. And sometimes I see parents push themselves maybe onto that school and almost kind of force the issue. The player's good. And then, you know, we want to go there. And the next thing you know, they're at a JUCO because it wasn't the right fit. I tell families to really go where you're wanted. Go where you're wanted. And at the end of the day, who's going to have the most skin in the game? And have a plan. Don't be scared. Like, I've had a lot of calls, especially with what's gone on with this junior college, you know, is so overlooked, especially like here in Texas, especially the Houston area. There's so many junior college. Majority of the scouts live here. We almost see those guys too much. And we also understand, like, that's another avenue to get to where you're trying to go. So I think at the end of the day, having a goal, understanding the big picture, try to get a plan in place. And then make your decision accordingly. But I've seen it on both sides. I've seen where kids have missed their opportunity because of just misinformation, not understanding. So they really got to educate themselves, know what they're going to get into if they do sign a pro contract, and also know, you know, if they go the college route, what could and couldn't happen. And then at the end of the day, you let them make that decision.
Right. And kind of explain that program to where, you know, you might have had a scholarship at a college, but, you know, in your contract, you know, that kid's going to be guaranteed to be able to go to that school later on after he's done playing pro ball.
Right. Well, the nuts and bolts of it and each organization is different, and it's a negotiated part of the contract. But the kind of basis of it is, you know, let's say it's X player, he's committed to UTRGV. Whatever school he's committed to, we just kind of, we open up a book, look at what it would cost to go there, and we give them that as their package. Tuition fees, room and board. See, and that was where the scholarship has really gotten better, and that's why I say it's second to none, because I think 5 or 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago. Don't quote me, but kid, there's just school isn't for everybody, you know. And the ones that were kind of getting left out were the kids that come from skilled families. You know, it comes from a family of plumbers, a family of electricians, really skilled workers. Where you had to go to a 4-year university accredited and stuffed in order to access your scholarship. Well, now those guys are able to go to trade schools. They're able to use that money to go to trade school. So that's where I say it really encompasses everyone to a point, and that's the safety net. It's, we understand, I think Major League Baseball understands that the chances of you getting there are slim, you know, are against you. But if it doesn't happen, then we're at least going to help you finish taking care of your education, or take care of it all in the case of a high school player.
Right. Okay. Now, you know, we talked about trying to get into scouting, but there is a, you know, associate scouts, that is something that a high school coach can do. So, you know, kind of explain what the job of an associate scout is and what do you look for in an associate scout?
There's kind of two associate scouts. I put them in buckets. You got the one that really, he just loves baseball. He's a grandpa. He's already done his life, and he's not trying to get anywhere. Right. He's that one's probably the least maintenance. Then I like those guys because I like to pick their mind, and you know, it's just getting the wisdom from the older cats. And then you got the younger crew that's just coming out of college, and like I said, they're trying to move fast. And those are the ones that you got to kind of watch out and see kind of what their agenda is, and what they really, if they really love the game and this is their passion, or is it really not about that? They're just, you know, trying to move up a ladder and get to making a good paycheck. So those are the ones that can create some issues, because they're always trying to, it's almost like an interview. They're always trying to get that next job. And as you know, you and I know, and how we kind of talk and scouts don't like to, they like to play it close to their vest, you know, and most teams do. And sometimes information can leak out that way. And I had a bad experience when I was a young scout, where my scouting director was at a game and found out through another scout that he was there. He knew he was there or going to be there because a bird dog or associate was popping off at a game. So it ended up back. Like, how did, you know, guys don't want you to know, especially, you know, I don't want, you know, if they find out, they find out, but I don't want guys to know where I'm going on a daily. You know, that's what we do. That's right. Our jobs, you know. So you got to be careful with it. I've been very fortunate with my crew, including you. You know, when I got this job, that's when I met you. Been able to establish a good network. And I think that's, from a scout standpoint, that's really important to be comfortable and know that you're not getting beat in an area because I could pick up a phone and find out about anybody down there because you're connected. So very, very important right. part of the scouting.
All right. So this is a big one for me. What are some do's and don'ts? Cause I've made mistakes with scouts, you know, early on in my career, but what are some do's and don'ts for high school coaches when talking to a scout? Say scout shows up, you know, wants to look at a kid. What are some things that he should be doing? What are some things that he needs to stay away from?
I would say just be honest. Be honest with that scout.
Right.
But there's been times I've come across a player that might have something in the background. And the thing is, we all know. And that discussion with that high school coach isn't the be all end all. You know, usually the kids are putting 3 or 4 references down on a questionnaire, and especially now, everything's so specialized. So they might have five, you know, a pitching coach, a hitting coach, a high school coach, the strength and conditioning guy, the counselor. So we're just going to be verifying kind of what you're telling us anyways. And so sometimes, you know, coaches don't want to give it to you straight. Just give it to us straight. That's all we're looking for in that regard. But we'll end up finding out anyways, because it's going to either be confirmed or kind of dismissed with the background work that we're doing anyways, you know. So, yeah, just be honest with those guys.
Right.
And most are. And most are. I'm just saying, you know, and there's been small instances, but that's it. We're talking to all the coaches.
Right. And my negative experience was, I was a young coach, maybe my second year, and, you know, we had a guy that was going to get drafted, and, you know, I got a scout in there poking and prodding him before a game, and it just bothered me. And I didn't know how to, you know, handle that.
Well,
and,
I can tell you this, and that's a thing that really, especially the guys that have been doing this job a long time, it really kind of irks us is, and that's the thing that you used to learn in scout school, is the etiquette of what we call working a ballpark, the do's and don'ts. And in that example that you gave, you have the right to, I mean, it's your ballpark, Bart, and scouts, once those guys hit the field, we shouldn't be up there. I mean, you're going to see guys on the fence and stuff, but we shouldn't be communicating with them. You know, he's there getting ready.
Right.
So you were, you know, in my opinion, you were in the right to tell the scout, hey man, I'll get you him afterwards, but we're trying to play. We're trying to compete. So.
Right. Now, what are some do's and don'ts for players when, you know, playing in front of a scout or, you know, having communication with a scout?
I try to tell players, you gotta go about it and always have it the mindset of you never know who's watching. And that's just it, you know, especially if it's a kid down there. A scout's not trying to be seen. You know, he might be down the line. He's trying to, because what happens is when players know that a scout's in the at the ballpark, oh, you watch their eyes. They know where you are at every second of that game. And so you may not be getting the right guy. You know, there's times we're trying to see in between. We may have seen the kid three times, and all he's done is excelled and succeeded, and we want to try to see him fail, you know. And so I try to tell players, just be yourself, play like, you know, play like someone, you know, someone may be watching at all times. One of my pet peeves is, and I think a lot of scout pet peeves, and you're seeing it more and more, parents taking kids drinks during the game, or girlfriends. Oh man, I saw this one this spring. and don't get me wrong, nothing wrong, but like, you're in the middle of the game, girlfriend yells from the stands, I love you, and he yells back, I love you too. So you know, stuff like that. Stay focused, you know. Guy, when you're in the dugout, scouts are paying attention. You know, we're getting right. A feel for what kind of teammate you are. How you strike out, are you going in there, are you firing the helmet, or are you putting it down? Just looking for, you know, signs of maturity or immaturity. But at all times, play the game hard, respect the game, respect your coaches, respect your competition, and you're good, you know?
Yeah. Good advice. And then the big one, cause I've seen some crazy stuff, even when, you know, I'm just going to scout, say I'm scouting another team, you know, for our high school season. So what are some do's and don'ts for parents? As soon as you bring out the radar gun, it just, you know, it starts to get crazy. So, you know, what are some things that, hey, you know, parents just need to realize, don't do this.
A lot of, like you said, when the radar comes out, there's an intrigue in what we're doing, from a scouting standpoint. A lot of time parents are trying to figure out what we're looking at, when we're looking at it, what's important, what's not. Just understand that's kind of, that's our office. And you might, especially with a high school player, you know, let's say you got a guy with a big arm, he's blowing fastballs, they can't touch him. You only got two or three breaking balls in the bullpen. And it might be that one time that they touch you on the shoulder, ask you what the velocity was, and you turn around and now he only snaps the curveball and you missed it, you know. And next thing you know, he doesn't throw anymore because he's dominating. And now you've waited all day to basically give this player his his 2 hours, you know. And I like to – and sometimes people, you know, oh, he might – I sometimes put my earphones in just to block everybody out because I really like to – get lost. I call it getting lost in the player, but that's our job. You know, it's kind of our bubble where you kind of, everything's blocked out. It was like that for, you know, especially when you're a player, it's kind of your safe zone, but it's our scouting zone and it's our work zone. And there might be something that we can miss. And so other than that, parents, just, you get the parents that try to come and sell you their kid. You don't need to sell your kid if he's good. If we're there, we already know he's good, you know. And that's how we run into a lot of other players, is you're there to see one. And like I said, the cream rises to the top. The good ones, something, they do something that catches your eye. And then that's when you start following that player. But to sum it up from the parent standpoint, scouts look at it as apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. So there's a lot of stuff that we're trying to figure out away from the field, that the first person you're looking at is you'll get a glimpse or maybe a cue is with the parents and how they are. And I'll give you an example. I remember, and it's usually every year you got one parent like this. But not all the time is it the player that you're there to see. And the parent was pacing and just like a nervous wreck. And then their son's on the mound, he's a pitcher, and he's doing the same thing. So we're trying, you know, and you're trying to figure out, like, okay, you're in a stadium with 40,000 people. How are you going to slow it all down? And so there's so many things that you're looking for in between the lines, but parents need to understand that you're being watched as well, you know? And so,
right.
Yeah.
All right. This one's a tough one. And you've kind of talked about it a little bit, but you know, what's something that you're looking for in a player that maybe me as a high school coach, I'm not even thinking about that. You know, so, you know, it'd be a surprise to me that, hey, you're looking, because really when we've talked on, like when we've done the chats on the Sports U, the stuff that you guys were looking for was a big surprise to me a lot of times when you're scouting, going over, evaluating a player. But what would be something that maybe would surprise me that you're looking for in a player?
You know, it's trying to look in that crystal ball, but what's it going to be in 4 or 5 years? You know, when he starts getting in his prime, what is it going to be? And a lot of times, as we just see the now, and it really is an eye opener for me when you go and you see the players that just sign out of the draft, and then you go the next spring training or the next instructional league, and they've gotten 12 to 15 months of nutrition and growth. And it's amazing how much they change, and especially with the medicine and technology these days, the players are just getting bigger and stronger. So kind of just looking at that player and what's it going to look like in 4 or 5 years, and what that tool set, where it fits on a field. Like sometimes there's been guys that they're playing high school shortstop, but they're going to end up being first basemen, you know, and that's, looking at body type, looking at body structure, looking at parents. And that's a big thing is, okay, the parents are a big indicator of what the body's going to look like later on down the road. Well, that helps us, you know, in terms of projection and saying, you know what, he may outgrow this position. Or you get that big arm catcher that can't hit, and now you're looking to make him a, you know, ends up being the Troy Percivals of the world that ends up being a closer, but they had a big arm, you know. So you got to, you know, just kind of thinking outside the box, you know, recognizing what they can do and try to see where you can maximize that one tool, that one ability, that one skill, and see if he can be, you know, a piece or a part, you know. So usually right. the big fish, you know, it's kind of everyone's kind of thinking the same thing. It's those ones that catch you by surprise 5 or 6 years ago. We go, oh, I really didn't think about it. And then you look back and go, man, he really did have he always had a really good arm, you know. And so I think that is just trying to figure it out, man. That's right. That's the million-dollar question is, what's it going to look like in 4 or 5 years? And that's a tough part of our job.
Right. Now you're looking into making yourself available to players, parents, coaches, kind of in a hot stove setting, you know, taking advantage of what everybody's using right now, Zoom and meetings and things like that. So, you know, what exactly is that going to entail? You know, what exactly are you going to provide?
Well, it's something that's coming down the pipeline that's in the works. We're trying to put the finishing touches on it. It's going to come after the draft, but just everyone's been in the home. This Zoom phenomenon just kind of, I guess, threw us ahead in terms of this technology, but it's given an opportunity to, you know, to reach out to a grander audience and have a platform, sitting down through this, you know, quarantine or whatever, need a lot of time to think. And a buddy of mine, we were sitting and talking, and we're just kind of, I guess, reminiscing and thinking ahead. And one thing that we realized was that between him and I, arguably, we probably have to have one, you know, less than 1% of the industry have the total background that we have. And I'll give you, you know, from the playing, you know, drafted, played, scouting, player development, in draft rooms, drafted big leaguers, just the whole gamut. And in his regard, in his resume, it's the same thing. He managed, played in college, drafted, played, scouted, been in draft rooms, signed big leaguers. And so what we realized is that we're getting old. We're getting old. I'm 46, and I think he just turned 49. And but we've both been in the game 25, 26 years. And so we just felt there's a wealth of knowledge, experience, information that we feel that we could share in a setting that's going to be, I think, a little bit different. And I don't want to go into it, but it's going to be very organic. I think it's going to be one of those situations when we get done with the session, the webinar, there's going to be multiple, but when we get done with it, we're going to look back and say, wow, that was amazing, just because the flow of it's going to be generated by our audience. And so we're looking forward to it, but right now we got to focus on the draft and get through that, and then get some things, you know, checked off the box in terms of making that a reality.
Okay, great. Now, almost done. So lightning round, real short answers, and these don't have to be baseball at all. So what's the latest thing that you learned that you're excited about, you know, probably over this break, you know, of something that you picked up that you learned?
I learned about my DNA. I decided nutrition, something obviously as an athlete, was, you know, something that we had to be in shape. And then you become a scout and you're in a car and stuff like that. You start getting out of shape, eating bad. And one thing, I've never been able to take vitamins for some particular reason. And now I found out why, but I've got, you know, I dialed in my personal nutrition with ID Life. And I get my personal nutrition now, and it's made a total difference in terms of my sleeping, getting the vitamins that I need and not the ones I don't. And I had a medication I was taking, and come to find out it was with most multivitamins that have more stuff in it than you need. It was causing a reaction. It was causing me to get sick. So I kind of gave up on vitamins. But now, you know, as we get older and get grayer, and I'm looking at my kids, want to be around for them. And so I was going to give it, you know, another try. And I had some friends that actually have had success and spoke very highly of ID Life. And so I took the plunge and got in, got my DNA and found out. And so now I get my vitamins, been feeling awesome. Energy's been up, and started dropping weight really naturally without having to change much of my diet. And so it was good just knowing what you're made up of and what type of workouts you actually need to do, you know, because the way they kind of explained it to me is two people on their treadmill, same diet, same body type, everything, eating the same, one's losing weight, one's gaining. Why is that? And so I was able to find out the why through ID Life. And so my wife and I are on it, and we've been really excited. So, yeah, we're going to continue to get healthy.
Yeah, and the ID Life video that you sent me that I looked up was, it just made sense. You know, it seemed like it made sense, you know, to pretty much specify what you need and things like that, eliminate what you don't. So it was pretty neat to watch.
A buddy of mine, and I'm not going to say his name, but he played in the big leagues, and he got his DNA back. And he's the one that kind of told me, hey, man, you need to really check into it. And he goes, I'll tell you what. He goes, my whole career, I had trouble bouncing back. And he says, the reason was, he goes, I just found out I have a gene that basically, you know, is inflammation. And he said, so I was holding on to more water. I was more inflamed. I couldn't flush it as quick as others, and I couldn't figure out why. And he says, once he got his DNA, it all clicked. And then same thing with his, it was his tendons, you know, it said something about his tendons. Well, he had trouble with his ankles, rolling his ankles. Once he rolled it, it always was weak. So it was really interesting. So it really helps you just in your workout, what your body type really needs to have the most effect. And so it opened my eyes and really excited about getting in better shape and getting healthy.
All right, last one. Favorite book or, you know, favorite resource that, you know, maybe on the phone or computer,
favorite
something
book,
like that?
I think the first year I started cross-checking, it was The Energy Bus.
That's a good one.
Oh, really?
That's what we read in class.
That was kind of one of my first ones, is putting in a kind of a supervisor or leadership role. And so I had all of our scouts in the area read it. And so much so, I had, you know, my wife read it, the kids read it, and I just thought it was a great book just to start, you know, to start things off.
Right.
Also, Glory Road.
Yeah.
It hits home for me because I went to Don Haskins, basketball camps, 3-4 years. I stayed there, you know, overnight, family, we had season tickets. So got to see all those guys, the Tim Hardaways, you know, Don Haskins had that pipeline from Chicago, like literally from the blacktop street courts of Chicago to UTEP. And so we were fortunate to see Tim Hardaway, Antonio Davis, Marlon Maxey, Greg Foster. Every year they had one or two NBA guys, or in some cases there was a couple Globetrotters on there. So I personally got to meet Don Haskins, and he was a legend in El Paso. So that was really cool to, so that's one of my fun, books that I read, and also the movie. So yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I know you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate you coming on. You know, you're the first and probably only scout that we'll have on, this podcast, but, just in case someone wants to kind of reach out to you, I'm not going to have you give an email or anything, but where can they find you online? Say Twitter or something like that.
Is ham_bone74. So like ham bone, 74. And I'll put it on there. Be on the lookout for hashtag chop up baseball with fork and ham. That's what's coming down the line. Chop it up baseball with fork and ham. And that will kind of give you a little insight onto who that other person is. But we got to get some things out the way in terms of on his end. But looks like it's going to happen. I think it's going to catch fire and be something, like I said, very organic, very fun. And what I want, what we want and not want is it's not. And that's one thing that kind of bugs me, Bart, is baseball's not cookie cutter. It's just, and so many people try to make it that way, and we don't want an environment that, oh, well, we've been in this game 26 years and all that. No, we want to, a lot of time we learn from hearing from coaches, you know, learn from being in a conference and having feedback and just getting other people's point of views and stuff. So what we want to do is having an environment where we can be open. We're gonna, you know, basically work off the audience, but leave there where you take what can work for you, what can't, and it's going to be an open book. The parameters are, you know, both of us are affiliated, so we don't talk about our organization. We don't talk about philosophy. We don't talk about players by first name, and we don't talk politics. Other than that, we want to be, we're an open book, and I think that's where it's going to be fun, is that, you know, we may not be trying to hear a story about, you know, Rod Carew that day, but someone asks a question. Next thing you know, we're going down the Rod Carew's, you know, route, because that was the first hitting coach I was introduced to, you know. And so it's going to be such an organic type of forum, and I think it's going to grow. And it's going to be fun, and so we're just trying to think ahead, you know, and provide some of the tales and knowledge and stuff that we've picked up along the way. Unfortunately, you can't give that stuff away free. So we're just trying to think ahead, you know, and you know, we don't know what's going to happen with everything that's going on. And but at the end of the day, we feel that it's going to be a fun baseball forum for anybody. It doesn't have to be just coaches. Yeah. It could be family, could be kids wanting to know. That's the big question that we get right now, is just there's so many people teaching so many things, and what we want to tell guys is everybody does it different. There's some absolutes that have to happen, but other than that, to get there, there's no one particular way. It's, they come in all shapes and sizes, you know, and that's what's great about this game is you could be a first round pick, you could be a at the time 50th round pick, 40th round pick, a free agent. You can make it, you know, and that's not to say the same in other right. sports. You know, if Altuve is not probably making it in the NBA, you know, the last one there was Muggsy Bogues, that small, you know, or in or in football. So, but that's what's special about the game of baseball. They come in all shapes and sizes. If you got desire and going to work your butt off, there's, you know, I remember David Eckstein, man, he took us to the World Series when we were back with the Angels, but no one ever really, you don't scout David Eckstein. David Eckstein finds you. And so there's an example there that right. you don't have to be overly gifted and God-given talent. But if you get your skill set and your effort and being the best teammate possible, those guys are very valuable. So keep working.
Well, if you're involved with that, I know it's going to be good. And I just wanted to kind of take this time to thank you for all the stuff that you've done for me. I mean, you know, it's not just helping out baseball wise, but you've come and talked at our clinics, and you've come to career day twice. I want to say, I know the first time at my wife's school. So, I mean, you do a lot for the areas that you serve also.
Anytime, man, when Bart comes calling, you just tell me when, as long as they let me do it. That day I came down to that career day, I got pulled over by a state trooper, okay? A state trooper, and I had to tell him, hey, I was just at a career day, and your buddies were there. And so anyways, the guy let me off. He thought it was pretty funny, and he's a baseball fan. I said, well, if you hear about a baseball player, give me a call. So I got off on the ticket, but I always love going down the valley. You're awesome. I haven't been able to get on a boat with you yet, but I definitely want to. And in fact, as soon as they let us back on the road and this thing gets cranked up, we got to get our clinic going or camp and make sure we're not missing anything down in the valley.
That's right, man. Hey, I appreciate it, Ken. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.